absolutely intercultural.
Fullständig interkulturell.
Absolut interkulturell.
Absolutamente intercultural.
Absolutely intercultural.
Welcome to show number 198 of Absolutely Intercultural, the podcast about all things intercultural. My name's Anne Fox, and this show is coming to you from Denmark. Happy New Year! So, it's time for those New Year's resolutions, which we don't tend to stick to. Maybe we have too many. Maybe we don't share them with anyone, so that makes them easier to break. In this show, I'm going to be exploring just one idea. Maybe, just maybe, if we stick to one idea, then we have a better chance of succeeding. And that one idea is about being a good neighbour. How about it? Worth a try? Let's start with some wonderful advice about how to communicate effectively.
The first meeting needs, you know, you have to concentrate on that person to the exclusion of everything else and look them in the eye and not pay. Let's say it's a social event. You just can't, you know, have your eyes looking at the other people around because maybe they're more interesting. Well, that's it. You've just destroyed your relationship that wasn't existing yet, just doing that. So it was a great, great, great talk.
Of course, I'm thinking about the massive refugee movements of 2015. But I and a small group of people from Canada, Australia, and Lithuania worked on this towards the end of 2015, and we quickly came to the conclusion that it wasn't just about refugees, but about communicating and connecting with other people in your immediate surroundings, no matter who they are or where they come from. If you're listening to this podcast, then maybe you're interested in making your class or training room more culturally responsive. You can read more about the 5-day residential course we offer in Denmark and elsewhere on www.absolutely-intercultural.com. This could be funded as professional development courses under Erasmus Plus Mobility in Europe. In fact, you don't have to specify the exact course your colleagues will attend in the Erasmus Plus application. You only need to have an idea about where it will be geographically so that the proposed budget covers the expenses. The deadline for applications is February the 2nd, so not much time left. Do get in touch if you have any questions about it. Social Learning for Social Impact was a free course offered online by McGill University in Montreal. The topic was social enterprise, and the idea was not just to learn about it in the abstract, but to actually work in a group on a real project at the same time as going through the course materials. I joined, and of course I suggested a project around the idea of teaching culture. But when the members of the group started discussing ideas, we realised that we wanted to work with the stage before someone steps into a classroom. That is, when you first arrive in a new area and how you're received. One of the group was from Lithuania, who had been in the original Teaching Culture project back in 2006. Another was Monique in Montreal in Canada, and a final member of the group was Rose in Australia, who was already working on an interesting new project focusing on refugee women by trying to include them in the local community by giving them sewing skills. Let's go absolutely sewed up and hear more about how learning to sew could help housebound women.
In the last couple of years, I've been teaching with refugees, adults, and I've had a look around at different ideas of teaching them and engaging them. And one of the things which I thought might be less threatening for them would be learning skills. So because a lot of the women are housebound, looking after children or even elderly women who are looking after children and not getting out to do courses at TAFE and various organisations, I decided it might be a good idea if they could learn some sewing skills. And so one idea that was put out there was that perhaps in one room we could be having the mum sewing program, and in the other room the carers and the volunteer could be looking after the young children, so that the mums could do their sewing uninterrupted and safely. Plus it would get people interested, it would get them out of the home to the location, and if they can produce some results, they might be able to get a little bit of work. It will be obviously good for social reasons, self-esteem, learning English, fitting into the community, and perhaps selling some of their wares at a market. We have local markets on weekends. Lots of home crafts and homemade goodies and all sorts of things. So perhaps we could have a store with my help probably, and set up some little store at one of those markets, which would raise their profile in the community, make them known about more, make them more aware, have the community more accepting of refugees, particularly women, who tend to be sort of overlooked quite a lot in their communities because they're basically mums and carers. So it has lots of positive angles to it. So you won't get people with closed attitudes and closed minds, which we have sometimes, because they just don't know about these people. So I think it breaks down a lot of barriers if you can do something at a grassroots level.
So can I ask you about the sewing? We're not talking about embroidery or anything like that. Are we talking about using industrial sewing machines?
Not at this stage, not initially. Initially, we're talking about basic skill levels. We're talking about providing women with equipment that they don't normally have, because these particular ones have come from refugee camps where they haven't had a lot of anything in Thailand and Burma. So initially, it's basically sewing machines, learning the basic skills on how you thread a machine, how you use a machine, how you construct a garment, how you cut out a pattern, and how you'd put a garment together. So you would make dresses for the children, tracksuits. They're nothing too difficult. But some women might have worked in factory environments, perhaps overseas, where they do have major clothing industries. But often they are doing the same thing over and over and over. So their job might be doing collars or zips or sleeves, but they're not doing the whole thing. And they're not cutting it out from a pattern from scratch. And they're not doing it for their own home to make new cushions in their lounge room or something like that. They're basically doing the same repetitive task quickly if they've learnt, and they're doing it continually. So I'm not looking at that. I'm looking at doing it from a social perspective and learning the skills, all the different skills, learning how to adapt something for another need, also learning how to repair things and alter things. And that's a really useful skill, because quite often you buy something, it's too long, it's too tight, it's too this, it's too that, you have to change. And if they've got large families, and quite a few of them have quite a few children, they really need to know how to do these sorts of things.
Our fingers are tightly crossed that Rose gets the funding that she's applied for in Australia, as this sounds like a really worthwhile project. Back at the McGill course, what we ended up with was a short game where you can either be the new neighbour or the old established neighbour. And then you have a series of choices about how much you get in contact with each other. You'll find a link to the game, which is online, on our blog at www.absolutely-intercultural.com. In the game, we included some short videos that Monique recorded with colleagues who had migrated to Canada about their first impressions. Listen to Haytham, a Syrian who arrived in Canada over 20 years ago, and Laurentia, who arrived from Romania 12 years ago, as they talk about some aspects of being absolutely new.
What's my biggest surprise when I came to Canada? My biggest surprise when I came is how many different races and how many different, how many people from different countries. And when I take the metro or the bus, I hear like two or three different languages at the same time. That was my biggest surprise here, how diversified the country and the people in the city. The second question, what's my best food? And this is my favorite question, because I like food, and I here because of the diversity of people from many countries. There are so many food, so many different kinds of foods here. But my best food is actually local food, and it's smoked meat. And it's really well done here in Montreal, and I recommend it for anybody visiting the city. I try not to eat a lot because it's not good for the, if you eat a lot, but it's once a while, it's very, very delicious and very good. The third question is my first impression here when I came. And my first impression I got of the city actually is that it's very flat, no mountains, no, and very straight, and the streets are all straight and very organized, the city, but not a lot of mountains. This is my first impression.
My name is Laurentia Dumitrescu. I'm here in Canada for almost 12 years. I came from Romania. And my colleague, Monique, asked me to answer a couple of questions. So the first question is, what was the biggest surprise when you came here? Well, I have to recognize that I was surprised, quite shocked, by the way the people here removed the snow after a snowstorm. So imagine a snowstorm here, it's 40 to 50 centimeters of snow in a couple of hours, 3-4 hours. So once it's done, okay, you have a lot of snow everywhere. But once it's done, almost instantaneously, big, huge machines came on the streets and they removed the snow almost everywhere. Especially on the sidewalks. Why on the sidewalks? Because the people have to walk on the sidewalk. They need to use the sidewalks. So the way they did it very quickly, very efficient. It was really a big surprise for me. Good for them. What was your first impression when you came here in Canada? Well, the first impression was that I was on the seaside, because it was windy, and in Romania, it's not like that. So I had the feeling I was on the border of the sea. And now the third question, what is your favorite food? I discovered here a traditional meal, which is called la poutine. Well, you have a mix of French fried potatoes, cheese and sauce. It's very good. But unfortunately, it's very hard for your stomach. So it's tasty, but I try to eat it once or twice a year. That's all, despite the fact that I really like it. And the fourth question, what would you like to tell people from your new country? Well, I have to admit that Canada is a country with a lot of opportunities for people of all backgrounds. You want to do something in your life, you have all the opportunities. You have to have the will to do it. So I don't regret my choice. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
Did you notice, by the way, that their favorite foods were both bad for you? Meanwhile, Monique had been to TEDx Montreal and told us about a very interesting talk about communicating without words. There are some really good ideas about how to communicate effectively, so listen carefully. Let's be absolutely riveted.
Yes, it was a full day. And I mean, when I first got there in the morning, you get to sit down and there's a tam-tam on your seat. And then you get to play with the tam-tam for a good 20 minutes before the conferences start. And you get to meet all kinds of people. You know, on your name tag, you had to put your interests so that people with similar interests could interact with you. It was quite the day. I loved it. This guy is a neuroscientist, but it doesn't look the part. I mean, a young guy with long hair and he's very good at explaining. So he wanted to know why when two people meet, sometimes, you know, it just clicks and you have a good relationships. And some other times it just doesn't. And is what he learned is the fact that people look each other into the eye and pay attention to each other in the first few minutes where they meet. And on a subconscious level, you can see whether the person is looking at you and paying attention to you, because there are some micro movement in the eyes that your subconscious can perceive and that you just don't see. And that makes the whole difference. And then he went to, I don't remember which country, with tribes that are, you know, unknown, to test his theory. And they were cannibals. And so, yes, the whole story was great. So he went there and he walked into the bush and, you know, hoping to meet people. At some point, you know, somebody dropped from thin air, or so he thought. And he met these people and they had no way of communicating with words. And they could only communicate with, you know, the look in their face and their movements. And he thought that, and at that point he said everything that he had learned and that he knew just went out of his mind, because he was scared that he would die.
Did they invite him for lunch?
And yes, but he managed, you know, to get his mind back. And after, he said, a couple of hours, you know, watching people in the eye and not moving, they managed to get closer and closer, and they would poke him and they would touch him. And they managed to get a good relationship going, and they built a village together. He ended up spending months there and learning their language. And that what he told us is, these people thought that he was a ghost because he was so pale. They didn't think he was a real person. So that's why they were poking him. So the whole story is great, and the message is great as well. You know, if you really want to have a working relationship with a person, the first meeting needs, you know, you have to concentrate on that person to the exclusion of everything else, and look them in the eye and not pay. Let's say it's a social event. You just can't, you know, have your eyes looking at the other people around because maybe they're more interesting. Well, that's it. You've just destroyed your relationship that wasn't existing yet, just doing that. So it was a great, great, great talk.
One of the things which may be a barrier for newcomers in a Western culture such as Australia is the issue of looking people in the eye. During one of our meetings, Rose told us what she had experienced with Asian people coming to Australia. Let's be absolutely direct.
And one of the other problems, I think, particularly with some of the refugees from Asia, was that for their culture, it's not polite to look someone in the eye. They tend to put the head down, and they just don't do that. So for them to learn to do that, even for employment reasons, is quite difficult, and they have a very clear social, I suppose you'd call it like a pecking order, really, as to who speaks, who listens, who goes first, who has an opinion, who doesn't have an opinion, who agrees, all this sort of thing. So in their cultures, some knowledge of that really is quite useful.
And in Absolutely Expensive, Monique talks about why it's mainly churches which sponsor refugees who come to live in Canada.
Oh, that's good, because we had something in the newspaper a few weeks ago about how it works if you're trying to get a refugee into Canada. And some people are doing it because it's family. Some Syrians are already in Canada and they're trying to get family. And the regular process is very expensive. You have to provide for them. And that means, I mean, rent an extra apartment, furnish it, have it ready before you can have them come in. And that's, I mean, that's why it's mostly churches who manage to get refugees coming, because you have to have a lot of people pitch in to pay for that. It's terrible because, I mean, people get into debt because they want some family members to join them in Canada. It's taking forever, obviously, but still, it's asking such a lot of resources. Because you have to give them almost the equivalent of what people are getting. You know, there aren't intermediate resources. You think that there would be resources that aren't that stringent for people who come from countries at war.
So Rose produced a leaflet giving some ideas on making the first steps to getting in contact with your neighbour. And Monique interviewed some of her foreign colleagues, while Indra from Lithuania found some interesting videos, and I put them together into a game called Good Neighbours. You need a link to start the game, and you will find that on our blog at www.absolutely-intercultural.com. Thank you so much to Indra, Rose and Monique for working with me over the last 3 months on the topic of being a good neighbour. One of the best results of our project came during our very last meeting when Rose talked about seeing an elderly woman while out walking her dog. Apparently, Rose often sees this woman while dog walking, but that particular evening, the woman seemed upset. So Rose stopped and asked if there was anything she could do to help. And Rose told us that if she hadn't been working on our Good Neighbour project, she wouldn't even have considered stopping. So how about it? How many people do you know in your immediate neighbourhood? Anybody who could do with a welcoming word, a helping hand? If we've motivated even one person to get in contact with a new neighbour, then we'll be very happy. So all the best for 2016. Don't forget to sign up to the Teaching Culture newsletter full of tips, latest news and other developments on our website at www.absolutely-intercultural.com. Or visit us on our Facebook page and add a comment. The next show will be coming to you from Germany on February the 5th with Laurent Borgmann. So stay tuned and remember to listen very, very carefully.
Absolutely intercultural.
Fullständig tverkulturell.
Absolut interkulturell.
Absolutamente intercultural.
Absolutely intercultural.